It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Ever wonder where your recyclables go when they leave the curb? Well, while most of Wisconsin's recycled materials stay in the Midwest, there is a chance that at least some of it goes to China. China is the world's leading buyer of recyclables, but the Chinese have adopted an anti-pollution program, and that means that they will not accept recycled materials less than 99.5% pure, a difficult standard to meet for America's single-stream recycling plants. How will China's new policies impact the recycling industries in the United States and Wisconsin? Well, that's what we're going to try to find out this morning on The Morning Show. What questions do you have about how the recycling industry works? Are you confused about recycling standards? Do you know how recycling is handled in your community? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Christine Miller is the Associated Recyclers of Wisconsin Vice President and Outagamie County's Recycling Coordinator. Christine, welcome to The Morning Show.
Good morning. Thank you.
Talk to us about China's new standards for recycling. What's changed?
Well, in January of this year, they had put in, as you had stated, a very strict rule to the contamination levels that are allowed in any of the scrap or recyclable materials that are sent from anywhere in the world, which are no one can meet those standards. So what it had done is it halted all imports of or exports of our materials from the United States into China's recycling stream.
What about other countries other than the United States?
Well, what has happened since then, other countries are accepting some of the materials that China has banned. So the Philippines, for instance, are now starting to take some of our recyclables. Not sure if they have the infrastructure over there to handle these materials. So we may be looking at another problem down the road. So what we're hoping is that the states that relied heavily on exporting their recyclables start to look internally and set up some infrastructure in the United States so we don't have to rely on exporting our recyclable materials.
Well, why are these new standards so difficult for American recycling facilities to meet?
Well, even our own domestic buyers allow usually like a 5 to 10% contamination level, because you'll never get a perfect bale of, let's say, paper. There is always going to be some contamination in there of the other recyclables, such as aluminum cans or plastic water bottles, because the equipment we use and the people that help sort can only do so much. It'll never be 100% newspaper in that bale. There will be some contamination, and all of the buyers know that. So they allow for a certain percentage of contamination. So we can meet the standards here in the United States, but China's standards are just way too strict. Basically, they're just saying we don't want it anymore.
Right. They don't want anyone else's recyclables. They'll just keep their own. Is that kind of what they're doing?
I guess. It'll be interesting to see how this all plays out. I'm not sure if China's infrastructure is set up internally well to recycle all of their materials that they produce. And you still, on occasion, need the natural resource, the initial feedstock, to strengthen those materials. So the forests, I'm not sure they have the forests that we have here that we manage in the United States, and so on and so forth, petroleum and that for the plastic. So it'll be interesting to see in the future how China reacts long-term with this.
So how has that affected us here in Wisconsin? Have recycling projects in Wisconsin been suspended or closed because of this?
I have not heard of any. I think the DNR would have alerted us if that was the case. Basically, what we're going to see in Wisconsin and what we're seeing here in Northeast Wisconsin is a lower price for the materials that we sell to the secondary buyers. So we just won't make as much money this year as we have in the past because the markets are completely flooded with all the materials from the states that relied on China to export.
So where do Wisconsin's recycled materials go? Who buys it?
Well, here in the Paper Valley area, we have lots of mills, paper mills, that buy most of the paper up in the Wisconsin area that make mostly tissue. And they're actually increasing production and building new paper mills here. So that's unusual to hear new paper mills being being created, which is very exciting for us in the paper industry. But most of our materials, like the plastics, go to mostly Michigan. Some go to the Illinois area. Our aluminum goes down south in the United States. That's where most of the aluminum processors and recyclers are located. They're in the southern part of the United States. So on occasion, we had exported some materials, but it was all about price. So if someone was going to pay us higher, then, of course, we would send it there. But generally speaking, our material stays in the United States.
So you mentioned that, okay, so this year you'll make less money. But what happens over time if you're making less money from secondary buyers?
Well, what might happen is that people might have to start looking at the cost of recycling, because when recycling was initially set up in Wisconsin in the early 90s, they kind of got the thought that recycling is free, which it isn't, because you have to pay the trucks to go out and pick up the material. We have to process it at a MRF, a material recovery facility, and then you have to ship it off. So there's a lot of jobs involved. There's a lot of processes, and it does cost money. Although it is cheaper than landfilling, maybe some fees for recycling may have to be line-itemed on specific.
Do you think we're going to have to go back to separating our recyclables like we did when we first started? I mean, I remember we had to keep the glass in one bin and the paper in another bin and the tin and other stuff in a third bin, and we had to separate all that before we put it out at the curb. Now we just throw it all into one big container and a truck comes along and picks it up. Do you see us going back to having to sort this again?
I don't know, because that's really an inefficient way to collect material, to send several trucks down the city streets and the emissions and the gas and the staff that it takes to operate all that equipment. So it's much more efficient to have one truck pick up all the material, bring it to a material recovery facility where it can be separated by the specialized equipment that we already have in place, and by people as well. So I think what will happen perhaps is we might be looking at some efficiencies within the material recovery facility to help separate the materials better. But knowing what to put in your recycling bin really starts at the home, and that is the best way to help the recycling programs, is knowing what is acceptable and not acceptable in your local community.
We have about 30 seconds left, so where can listeners go if they're confused about the correct way to recycle? Where can they get information?
Sure. Well, we have a great website that has just started called recycleRightWisconsin.org, and you can go to that website and click on your community. If your community is not listed there, you might want to reach out to your elected officials and push them to just simply come in and give us that information. We can add any community in Wisconsin to it, and then you really will know what you can and cannot recycle in the area.
And we'll have that link up on our website as well. Christine, thank you for joining us. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Christine Miller, Associated Recyclers of Wisconsin Vice President. Coming up next, we ask the question, what does natural mean when it's on our food labels? I'm John Munson. It's The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. A class action lawsuit filed against LaCroix's parent company claims the carbonated water isn't as natural as its labeling suggests, a charge the company denies. We zoom out to consider how the U.S. Food and Drug Administration views the term natural and how tightly it controls or doesn't control the word's use on food labels. We'll also talk about how it affects consumer behavior. Speaking of which, when you see the words natural or all natural on a food label, what do you think that means? Does that influence whether or not you buy the product? Have you recently started checking food labels before you buy certain things at the grocery store? What led to that change? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234 is the number to call to join the conversation. You can also send us an email, ideas@wpr.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Michael Reese is a consumer protection law litigator based in New York City. For more than a decade, he's litigated dozens of food law cases throughout the United States on behalf of consumers, many focusing on the use of the term natural. Michael, welcome to the morning show.
Good morning. Thank you, John, for having me.
So I guess the big question here is, does the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, have any sort of official definition for natural?
It does have an official definition, but very limited, just to flavors and colors. With respect to a broader definition, there is no definition made by the FDA, though the FDA has been considering doing that for about 3 years now.
So essentially then what that means is that when it comes to natural, the truth is just what we all agree on or something like that.
Or disagree on.
Or disagree on, right.
And the difficulty is, and I think this is one of the difficulties that the FDA is facing, is that when you label a food natural, it can cover all different types of food and have different types of meanings to different types of people. What we've seen, and I both litigate cases involving the term natural. I also am a food lawyer and food law professor at Brooklyn Law School. And I know in talking to my students, some people think natural should pertain to how the food is grown. Some people think that natural should also pertain to whether or not the seed itself is from genetically modified organisms, also known as GMO, which is a hot topic of debate these days. What type of chemicals go into the food, the flavoring that goes into the food, how the animals are treated. It covers a wide array of different aspects of the food that eventually is ingested by us.
Okay, so but when a food company decides it wants to put the words natural or all natural on a product's packaging, does the FDA make it jump through any hoops first?
Not really. The only thing the FDA has issued is informal guidance. And I'll read it to you because I think it shows you that it lacks real clarity. So this is the informal guidance that the FDA has issued on the term natural. It says, the FDA has considered the term natural to mean that nothing artificial or synthetic, including all color additives regardless of source, have been included in or has been added to a food that would not normally be expected, to be in that food. It doesn't address production methods, use of pesticides, animal treatments, irradiation, pasteurization, and even the limited terminology that the FDA has given us says it would not normally be expected to be in that food. So what exactly that means is unclear, and again, it's only informal policy that was issued back in 1991 when the FDA took up the issue of potentially defining the term natural, but in fact punted on that because the FDA realized it was a very complex issue.
Well, kind of sounds like the term, from the legal perspective, the term natural it has almost the same clarity as the term pornography. We'll know it when we see it. We've got callers who want to join us already, as we expected we would. Let's go to Menominee, where Raj is on the phone with us. Good morning. Thanks for joining the morning show.
Hey, very good morning, guys. Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was actually listening to the conversation, and I agree with the previous the caller from New York. And based on my experience, I have seen only a natural, the term natural word. I don't think so there is proper definition for that. But I have seen only on few labels, especially like food and colors kind of stuff, like, you know, colors, flavored colors or natural colors. That again depends on you know, depends on side effects. Like, mostly they want to be a safe side, like, you know, okay, all these are like, and when you see bottom, there will be a terms and conditions in like small letters. So everything is like, I mean, like, you know, nowadays, if I compare the food from 20, 30 years back and now, it's all about the pesticides, what we are using, hybrid, chemicals. Even though if I go farmer's market, if I prefer farmer's market, even they are preferring the same, you know, to get the quality so soon and get out, you know, due to the climate and all. So there is no other option, you know, that is what my, you know, thing.
Okay. Raj, thanks a lot for your call. Michael Reese?
Right. I think what consumers really want is transparency. And the difficulty with the term natural, and actually a lot of packaging, and it doesn't have to be limited to the term natural, but that's what we're discussing here today, is the lack of transparency. Hopefully the FDA will step in and do something. Back in November of 2015, the FDA asked for public comment on whether or not it should get involved in this area, whether or not it should define the term natural and how it should define the term natural. To date, it has not made a decision. It does not have to make a decision. In fact, one of the questions that it asked the public was whether or not it should get involved in this area in the first place. But I think everybody would hopefully agree that more information to consumers, more transparency to consumers is a much better thing.
So what do we know about how consumers respond to the label natural on a food product?
Sure. So it's interesting why the FDA is potentially getting involved in this area. There were four citizens' petitions sent to the FDA asking for it to get involved, and one of those was actually by Consumer Union, which is the company that publishes Consumer Reports. And that was a citizen's petition sent in June of 2014. And it was actually a very informed citizen's petition because it was based upon a survey of, I believe, 1,000 people that Consumer Union had done. And the results were very interesting. So in that survey, it found that consumers who saw the term natural assumed that it included 66% thought it had no artificial ingredients or colors, and 65% thought that there are no chemicals used during the processing, and 64% thought that there are no GMOs were used. Consumer Union, based upon its survey, came to the conclusion that consumers were being misled and deceived by the term natural, and actually in its petition to the FDA has asked the FDA to ban use of the term natural.
Well, I guess that suggests the natural, no pun intended, next question, which is, would it even be possible for a mass food producer to meet those standards? How do you produce something for consumption by thousands or perhaps millions of people without using any chemicals or additives? I don't, you know, is it even possible?
Well, it certainly depends on the type of food. If we're talking about certain foods that are fruit and vegetables, and actually even packaged food, there is a standard out there, and that is organic. It is a defined standard. It has to meet certain criteria. And in fact, one of the things that the citizens' petition from Consumer Union pointed out is a lot of consumers assume that natural, they equate it with organic. So it is possible, and a lot of companies are doing it already with the organic standard.
We're talking about the term natural when applied to food. A class action lawsuit was recently filed against the company that makes LaCroix, which is a popular brand of flavored carbonated water. It alleges that despite its all-natural branding, the water actually contains a number of artificial ingredients. Michael, is this suit unique, or are we seeing more people take issue with this kind of branding companies?
This suit is not unique by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, hundreds of lawsuits challenging the term natural have been filed in the last several years. And I expect this to continue probably unless the FDA steps in and makes some type of rulemaking here.
Okay. We are discussing the term natural with Michael Reese, a consumer protection law litigator based in New York City. When you see the words natural or all natural on a food label, what does that say to you? Does that influence whether or not you buy the product? Have you recently started maybe checking your labels a little closer, more closely before you buy certain things in the store? And what led you to do that? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Our conversation with Michael Reese continues, and we'd love it if you would join us. 800-642-1234. I'm John Munson. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. We're considering how the U.S. Food and Drug Administration views the term natural and how tightly it controls or doesn't control that word's use on food labels. We also explore how it affects consumer behavior. Have you recently started checking food labels more carefully before you buy certain products at the grocery store? And what led you to start doing that? Maybe there was a product you bought for years assuming it was all natural, only to learn later that it used artificial ingredients. What happened? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Email address is ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Michael Reist is our guest. He's a consumer protection law litigator based in New York City. More than a decade, he's litigated dozens of food law cases throughout the United States on behalf of consumers, many focusing on the use of the term natural. The use of the term natural, really, Michael, isn't anything new. I mean, we've been seeing this since, what, the early 70s?
That's correct.
And so, you know, are consumers simply becoming more savvy about reading labels and asking more questions? I mean, we had a caller who couldn't stay with us, Jess from Menominee, who called in to say, that if you look at the labels on food, there's a lot of chemicals and it's sort of hidden. It means a lot to me to know what I'm putting in my body, and I've started to look more closely at labels. So is Jess a representative of kind of our maybe a little more savvy shopper that we have these days, and they're asking questions about, okay, so what does natural mean?
Well, fortunately, food labeling has become more transparent since the 70s. In fact, there have been major amendments to the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, including the Nutrition Labeling Education Act in the 90s, which actually, for the first time, put on that nutrition fact panel that we're also aware of now, and the list of ingredients. And fortunately, with, I think, smartphones and the Internet accessible to so many people, people are able to get information much easier. At the same time, marketing is very sophisticated. Consumers are often in a hurry when they're buying products and rely upon the information on the front of the label, only sometimes to find out later when they go home that the back of the label tells them a different story.
So tell us what we know about ingredients that are, quote, generally recognized as safe, unquote, or GRAS, as they're called.
Sure. So it's interesting because these are controversial as well. In fact, there's a great report by the NRDC from April of 2014, which states that instead of being called generally recognized as safe, it should be called generally recognized as secret. And it's a really interesting description of chemicals added to the food in the United States. But under GRAS, the standard is really it's safe until proven unsafe. And we have to realize that the way that our regulatory system is set up with respect to the labeling of most food items under the FDA, the FDA doesn't have the resources to address all the different products on the shelves. So it's really left up to the industry to do so. And that includes GRAS, that generally recognized as safe. And there are thousands of chemicals that supposedly are generally recognized as safe, but really are unknown as far as what their long-term effects are.
So how do these ingredients affect the claims that companies make about their food products?
Right. So some claims are regulated. Anything in the nutrition fact panel, which is what you'll see where it lists the calories and other nutritional information, same with the list of ingredients. On the front of the packaging, it's usually a much different story, and there are terms that you see that are being challenged in the courts every day. Natural is one of them. Nutritious is another. Wholesome is another. And there's been actually a lot of litigation, not only about natural, but with respect to whether or not products are actually wholesome or nutritious if they have a lot of added sugar. And actually, there's been a number of these cases brought regarding cereals that are winding their way through the courts.
So why is this such a tough area for the FDA to regulate?
It's a tough area because there's a really great deal of different opinions on it. As I was mentioning earlier during the program, the FDA is now considering making rulemaking here because it was in response to four petitions, and the four petitions are actually very diverse. I was talking earlier about one of the petitions was from Consumer Union, which is the parent company that publishes Consumer Reports, and they've asked for an outright ban on the term natural. Another petition was submitted by the Grocer Manufacturers Association, which is basically the trade organization that represents a lot of food companies and retailers, and they really focus on GMOs, and their petition to the FDA is you should allow natural foods to be called natural that come from GMO seed or foods. And then there's another petition done by Sara Lee that really asked for a broad definition of the term natural, and another one from the Sugar Association, which does the same thing. So in response to these petitions, the FDA has actually asked the public for a comment, and the questions the FDA has asked is, should we define the term natural? Should we prohibit the term natural? What types of food should be allowed to have the term natural? Should they be single-ingredient foods, or should they be more complex food? Should it take into account the processing of food, how animals are treated if perhaps the food is derived from animals such as dairy or other types of animal-derived food? Should you take into consideration fermentation, irridation, pasteurization? It's a very complicated area, and I think the FDA is really facing a difficult issue in deciding what to do.
Michael Reese is a consumer protection law litigator based in New York City. Do the terms natural or all natural on food labels influence whether or not you buy the product? Let us know at 800-642-1234. Maybe you've recently started checking food labels before you buy certain things in the grocery store. Why did you decide to make that change? What was it that caused you to say, hey, I want to know what's in here? Was it maybe a health scare, a documentary you watched, a talk show you listened to on Wisconsin Public Radio? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, ideas at WPR.org. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. So, Michael, I guess the bottom line here is, from your perspective, do you think we will ever see the FDA taking a firm stand on the issue of natural in food labeling that we're talking about today?
It's really hard to predict. It's been 3 years, almost to the day. It was November 21st, 2015, when the FDA asked for comment. And it's not the first time the FDA has asked for comment on whether or not it should make a rule in this area. It did the same thing back in 1991 and ultimately determined that it would not make a rule at the time because it was too complicated of an area to get involved in. I hope the FDA does so. I think that this is an area that everybody would benefit if there was a definite rule stated by the FDA. That said, I also want it to be a fair and transparent process where all stakeholders and certainly consumer interests are thought of.
So what's the response been when the FDA has called for comment? What are people telling them? Do we know?
Yes, and these are all on the FDA's website. There are thousands of public comments, and they range all over the place. But for the most part, it seems that people are upset when they find out that if their product's been labeled natural, but in fact contains GMOs or has some type of highly processed method of being made or contains synthetics. They're upset about that and don't want those type of ingredients in their foods.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the whole arena of organic and how we got to that. I mean, the U.S. Department of Agriculture began to more clearly define what organic was. Could the FDA end up following the path that the Agriculture Department followed?
It could, and that may be one of the simplest solutions, is to basically adopt a standard that is like the organic standard. And the organic standard covers a lot of the issues that we've been discussing today. It covers how the food is processed, how it's grown, how the animals are treated, the use or lack of use of pesticides. I think that's what people are looking for when they see a food labeled as natural. I think for many people, it serves as a substitute for organic.
Let's take another call before we go to break here. Bert is in Rhinelander. Bert, good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I'm wondering about the term certified. I have recently ran into a packaging of soil that has state certified on it, and I've asked what is certified, and they don't have an answer to that. And it also has organic matter written on the front of the bag. So, I mean, it leads you to believe it's certified organic, which it is not. You know, so I'm wondering about the terminology of certified and how you would find out what it's certified for.
Yeah, Bert, thanks for that call. And Michael, I'm going to ask you to hold your answer for just a moment here. Go ahead and answer this question quickly, because we're just about at a break.
Sure. So I think any definition for natural should be subject to a certification process. I'm not particularly aware of the product that Bert's talking about. Let's
talk about certification in general, because certified organic is something that we do see. In fact, why don't we do this? Let's hold that certification question for just a moment and come back to it when we return. And we've got some other callers who want to join us. You could be one of them at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. We're talking about the terms natural or all natural in food. Wondering what you think. Does that influence whether or not you buy the product? Michael Reese is with us, and we'll continue our conversation in a moment. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. When you see the words natural or all natural on a food label, what do you think that means? Well, that's one of the things we're considering today on the morning show, wondering what you think it means. What should it mean? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Michael Reese is a consumer protection law litigator based in New York. He's with us today to help sort through this issue. Michael, before the break, we were talking about, in response to Bert's question, about certification. So let's say that we do arrive at some sort of agreement on what natural means. How would the certification, how would that word be correctly used, you think? I mean, we see it in organic, but I think that most people still don't really understand what it means.
Right. So I think, first of all, to be able to have a certification program, you need very clear standards set forth by the FDA. And then it could probably be done by a third-party certification program. You would want them to be neutral so that they would come in, wouldn't have any type of affiliation with the company or the products that they're certifying. But that's something that's very reasonable. And you actually see it with respect to GMO, even though it's not even a standard that's promulgated by the FDA, but there's the Non-GMO Verification Project, which sets forth its standard. It's an independent third-party verifier, and you see this on a lot of products these days, ranging from everything from potato chips to almost anything in the aisles of the grocery stores.
Let's take another call. Carly is with us in Cumberland. Carly, good morning. Thanks for joining us on the morning show.
Hi. I'm going to be a health teacher, and I guess my question was, what kind of message do we want to send to children when it comes to picking out foods that are natural? I just know that it could be a little overwhelming for everyone, but especially kids when it comes to picking out their own foods and which ones are healthy or not.
Yeah, Carly, thanks for that. Michael Reese, what about what Carly's talking about here? What should we be telling our kids about the term natural and how they decide what's what?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's something that unfortunately hasn't come to the forefront of the discussion to date. I think a lot of people do assume a product that is labeled natural means it's a healthy product, but that's not necessarily the case. And I think a good example is, or comparison is organic. There are organic Cheetos. They may be delicious and they may leave your fingers orange, but they aren't necessarily as nutritious as, let's say, an apple or a vegetable.
I have to say, and with all fairness and meaning no disrespect to Cheetos, the idea that Cheetos could be in any way nutritious is ironic to me, but that could just be me. How much trouble did I just get myself into there? Eric in Madison, you'll be next. Eric, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, good morning.
Yeah, morning. Go ahead.
You know, it's interesting. I guess I'm cynical on this issue, but I mean, if something is in a package or I buy it off the shelf, it's been sitting there for a month or more, you know, regardless of whether it says certified, organic, or whatever, you know, I look at that more or less as a marketing tool to try to suck me into buying the product. I mean, if I didn't grow it, if I didn't kill it and harvest it, there's no guarantee about its natural quality or things of that sort. So I take all that with that proverbial grain of salt. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, Eric, thanks for that. Michael Reese, Eric, hey, saying, you know what, I don't really believe any of this. It's all marketing, and, you know, I just don't expect, I don't have high expectations if I didn't grow it myself.
Yeah, and that's a very good point as well. And Michael Pollan, who's written a number of books on food, has one called Food Rules. And his first rule is eat food. And as simple as that sounds, it is difficult in our society today because so much of our food, when you go to a grocery store, is processed or packaged. But if we were to stick with traditional foods that you would find in a farmer's market or even in grocery stores, but you know, resemble the foods that your grandmother and your grandfather ate, we would all be a much better off. It'd be a much easier place. The reality, though, is that our society, we live in a fast-moving society where we want our foods packaged and pumped up with nutrition so that we really don't have to think about what we're eating. And I think that's one of the issues and troubles that we're having today.
Michael Reese is a consumer protection law litigator based in New York City. Well, of course, if we go back to what Grandma and Grandpa had, we'd be eating a lot of beets and turnips and rutabaga in the wintertime because, you know, if you're not going to preserve your food and if it comes from thousands of miles away, if it's produce or whatever it is, by the time it gets to you, it's not going to be very nutritious. So can we really turn the clock back like that?
There's certainly advances in science that help the food system, but there's a lot of food that it's not really food. It's masquerading as food. Another rule that Michael Pollan has in his Food Rules book is if your grandmother wouldn't know how to eat it, don't eat it yourself. And I think the example that he used was a Go-Gurt. And if you gave your grandmother a Go-Gurt, she may not know exactly what to do with it to be able to consume it. So I think if you stick to what makes sense, And I think if you kind of slow down and think, is this something that I'm eating because I want to eat it and it's nutritious, or am I just doing it because it's easy and it's giving me calories? The reality is probably those are empty calories, and it's a real question as to what else is going in your body with that particular item.
Let's take a quick question as we come to the close of the program here. Let's take a quick question from Blake in Hurley. Blake, good morning. Thanks for joining us on the morning show.
Yeah, good morning. Really enjoying the program this morning. Say, just quickly, I just wanted to comment how I prefer, as far as you were talking earlier about if FDA should be involved in that. I like less rules and regulations. Basically, information is so available to us that we can educate ourselves quickly, and if we can choose from one product to the next, we can look at the back, see the nutrition information, read it ourselves, and make our own choices as far as if we want to put things in our body or not. And that's basically why not.
Okay, Blake, thanks for sharing that perspective. Michael Reese, caveat emptor, read the labels yourself.
Right, and I agree with that. The problem is, even if you read the labels, with a lot of these foods, you need a science degree to understand what's contained in them. And even with that, a lot of the labels contain descriptions such as natural flavors, but don't exactly tell you what are those natural flavors.
Mm. If you could leave consumers with one thing to take away from our conversation today, what would that be?
Certainly read the labels, but also trust your instincts. And if it doesn't seem like a food that your grandparents wouldn't recognize, it's not a food that you should recognize.
Well, I can't call my grandparents anymore because they're all gone, so I'd have to guess. I suppose I could use my mother as a standard for that. But, you know, we all want to go to the grocery store and pick something up to eat today or tomorrow or whatever, and we expect that when we open the package, it's not going to be spoiled. And so the food company, the people that manufacture it are going to have to use something to preserve it. Should we have the expectation that when we walk in the grocery store that everything is going to be free of any kind of chemicals? Is that reasonable?
I think as long as people have choices. The reality, though, too, is nobody wants a food that will never spoil. Spoliation is actually part of life, and it's one of the reasons that foods taste good.
Mm-hmm.
So if we actually had foods that were not spoiling, it would be pretty close to eating plastic, and that's not anything that any of us want.
No, we don't want to be eating plastic. Michael Reese, consumer protection law litigator based in New York City. For more than a decade, he's litigated dozens of food law cases throughout the U.S. on behalf of consumers. Michael, thank you for joining us today.
Great. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Coming up after the news from NPR and WPR, our candidate interviews continue. Next up, Mandela Barnes, Democratic candidate for Lieutenant Governor. I'm John Munson. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.